Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Lauren McCullough. Lauren is the co-founder and CEO of Trommel. Trommel is an advanced analytics and reporting platform designed specifically for auto parts sellers. And they have really dug deep into this vertical. And they have designed a really cool technology to help these sellers be more successful, more profitable, and understand anomalies in their channel performance so that they can address those and make more money. They have deep integrations with existing wholesale distribution channels, marketplaces, and e-commerce platforms. And so they are doing something really super interesting in this space. Enjoy the conversation. I know I did. This is the E-commerce Edge podcast with your host, Jason Greenwood. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is my extreme pleasure to welcome Lauren McCullough, the co-founder and CEO of Trommel, to the pod. Welcome, Lauren.
Thanks for having me.
It's funny. When we connected on LinkedIn, I'll tell you what grabbed my two things grabbed my attention. First of all, the fact that you're a motorbike rider, and two, that you're into four-wheel drives. And I was like, cool, I've been riding motorbikes since I was 3 years old. I started out on dirt and then got into street bikes later on in my life. And now that we're based here in Mexico, I'm seriously considering buying a Wrangler Rubicon. And so both of those things leapt out at me off of your profile. And I have to say, that's what drew me in before the tech. So
amazing.
I hope that that's okay. I hope that's okay.
Nope, that's good. Yeah, no, it's perfect. And I work in the automotive industry, so like it all works out well. But I do have to say, we're a Ford family, so I have to advocate for putting the Bronco on your list. But it test drives make your choice.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I have owned a couple of Fords over the years, as has my family. But I tell you, it's so interesting. The new Bronco, it almost looks like a toy truck. It almost looks like a Tonka truck. It literally looks like a it's just the big giant wheels and everything. It looks like you could pick it up and play with it in your sandpit.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. I think it's just people have their affinities, but I like it because just some of the simple features, like taking the doors off, is so much easier. It's a lot quieter, I think, than what a Wrangler is. And we're Ford folks, so it worked out well for us. I waited for 2.5 years for it.
Okay, fair enough. Although, what about the Wrangler 392, the brand new beast with the Hemi? That's got to be a pretty cool vehicle.
That's true. That's true. I don't know if I'm hardcore enough to have something that big, but like it depends. It depends what you're playing with. It depends what your toy you're taking. You could go out west and go for days on it.
Totally. And that brings us to Trommel and what Trommel is. And you are a specialist analytics and reporting platform designed specifically for auto parts sellers. At least that's what it says on the tin. Full transparency. I've never worked with a Trommel platform before, but as I understand it, that's what you guys do and specialize in.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we built this really because our founding team has experience in the automotive industry. And what we recognize is that while there was starting to become some new reporting platforms, because it became this really shift we noticed in the last couple of years to bottom line growth and not just focusing on revenue growth, right? That's expensive, all those other things. And we realized that within the automotive industry, there was really no one supporting these type of companies. And some of it is a matter of function of the technology, right? Do you have the right integrations? Do you understand what it's like to support 400,000 listings? Because that's a default in the space. But also just recognizing that this is an industry that wants people who speak their language, who understand them and understand some of the unique challenges they have. I think eventually we'll focus on what I would consider to be all industrial parts and components. But right now and for the next few years, we're really going to be laser focused on the auto industry, auto, power, sports, heavy duty.
And it's so interesting because, look, I've been in this space for a really long time, and I've been exposed to some really cool technology from Tech Alliance and their parts fitment technology to AutoEye down in Australia and their fitment technology. And almost everything that I've been exposed to in this industry from an underlying tech perspective is pre-purchase. It's how can we make sure that our customers are buying the right product or the right vehicle or piece of equipment so that we have fewer returns, less frustration by our customer, just in general. How can we create a really seamless, because man, this space is so insanely complex. And I've architected a couple of e-commerce websites for auto parts sellers, and just the fitment piece alone, whether it be based on VIN, whether it be based on plate, whether it be based on make, model, year, whether it be based on K-type, whether it be based on region of the world and region specific models, mid-year releases. When you think about our industry, it is insane just how complex the auto parts space is, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we're fortunate those things exist. And people have been putting a lot of work into the content management side and the automation piece. And we couldn't exist without that. We really consider ourselves going to be that last piece of the puzzle, right? You get up online, what you're selling and what it fits. And then you start automating your processes because, again, selling hundreds of thousands of parts at a time across multiple WDs, whatever it's going to be. And then the final phase that we really noticed was missing is, okay, but am I actually making any money here? And what am I making money? Because it's easy to maintain contribution margin and understand it if you're selling five things. It's not even so bad if you're selling 500 things. But if you start understanding the complexity and the different buying processes that exist within auto, you start to recognize why it is that people really can't get a grasp on this. And we're still an industry that's in, like, cliche, right? The digital transformation phase. And so we really feel that there is this huge, we've noticed that there's this huge gap in the industry for understanding that, yeah, that post-transaction sale and, like, being able to, one, understand what is my SKUs, what's the profitability over time, where am I leaking out profits, and also where do I have opportunities to really double down? Because often if you're a reseller, you're not working with a lot of margin. And even at the manufacturer level, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And so being able to have a software solution to that really is the only way we feel that you can start to really run a sustainable, profitable practice long term, especially for those that don't have a lot of margin to work with.
Totally. And auto parts is one of those places where the margins can be razor thin. And especially on OEM parts, the margins can be even more razor thin. And they have such a tight distribution network that a lot of these resellers, they can't get their hands, or they're doing like parallel importing, or they're doing things like that. And so their margins can be even thinner because they've got to pay for international freight costs. And a lot of these parts are big and they're heavy and they're volumetrically just massive. So it's a challenging space to be in. But as I understand it, Absolutely. You guys have also doubled down and niched down on marketplace sellers, as opposed to maybe a D2C seller that's selling through a Shopify website. You've really niched down on this concept of helping marketplace sellers of auto parts understand the performance of their sales, taking into account all of the variable costs that come into play when you're selling on a marketplace, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we do have clients that sell just on Shopify, and most of them sell across platforms or across multiple channels. And that's the point. It's because of the layers of complexity, right? It, like, keeps adding over and over again. And so for us, what we recognize is, especially with Amazon, eBay, Walmart sellers, right? The vulnerability you already have selling on your website just 10x's. Like, one of our first clients we had, they had a pricing error, lost 60 grand. We had people missing credits on invoices. We had people incorrectly pricing kits. And on your website, right, you see that happens, you can't see orders, right? And maybe you have a couple unhappy customers, but they get it. Well, on Amazon, now you have to make the decision that says, okay, do I basically lose my Amazon account because of the mistake I've made, or do I just eat it? And a lot of times they would have to eat it because this problem would just leak on for so long. And what we want to be able to do is, right now, we identify it right away, and being able to help them zero out that inventory while they investigate what happened. But even as we start to look forward, as our forecasting goes forward, we'll be able to actually predict that before it happens. That's really one of our big goals, is if you're trying to make money in this industry, you can't have a leaky bucket. Like, you can't have profits leaking out. You've got to maintain everything you can. And so we really want to make sure that they're able to have their thumb on the pulse of anything that might be going wrong. Because it's not one problem what we're looking for. It's the fact that every day, 1,000 things can go wrong. And how do you make sure you get that insight at the right time? And it's not going to be by looking through 300 reports and hoping you identify it. We have to actually pick that out. And good thing is, we have things like AI that are really good at that.
And just to be clear, you are not an omnichannel listing platform. So you don't help people list their products on Amazon, eBay, Walmart Plus, et cetera. You are specifically a data visualization and analytics layer over the top of those sales channels, so that these brands can better understand, okay, cool, on this one, I made this margin. On this one, I made this margin. On this one, I should be selling at this price, but I'm selling at this price. Here's what, and I'm guessing that there's some, I'm assuming, but I could be wrong, that there's some element of competitor analysis that goes along with this in terms of, hey, are we competitively priced on these specific marketplaces for matched SKUs?
Yeah, to some extent. So it that stuff we're still ironing out in our company right now. So what we do with our customers at this point, we're very hands-on. So we have our kind of automated system, so you can see how much did I make on every order, SKU, channel, customer, brand, slice and dice it however you want. And then we pick up patterns and abnormalities and trends. But what we work with our customer, and this is just part of being a startup, is we really want to partner with our customers so we can say, hey, what's an insight that we could provide automatically at scale, but we don't provide now. So competitor analysis came out of this recently. Hey, I really wish I had a better competitor analyst. Okay, this is something we're going to build. And now that's a component of insights that we can actually offer. So that's been our iterative process of working with our clients, because we recognize that the only way for these insights to be impactful is if they're directly hearing and seeing what these customers need on a daily basis. And then for us, as we're launching right now a chat-based app to, hey, talk to your data warehouse. So ChatGPT for your data warehouse, and that same component can give us customer discovery along the way. So we can say, hey, our customers really want to know about this. We do or don't have the data structure to report on that. And most of the time, it's just going to be because no one's asked that question before. So now we can cue that in as a prompt. And then now that's not something we're just available to provide, also something we're monitoring for. Because it's that monitoring component to pull out those golden insights, right? As we talked about, trying to pull out what's important, that's the key to the real solution, we believe.
And when we think about how you technically get the data into your platform to begin with, are you connecting to the API layer over at Amazon, eBay, Walmart Plus? Are you doing RPA and, you know, logging in via RPA and doing some scraping? Or, you know, how are you getting, what is the source of the raw data that you're getting in?
In the automotive industry, the answer is all the above. So obviously, we're going to pull over API when you have it. And most of the platforms, the selling platforms, were able to offer that. But because we work with a lot of customers who do drop shipping, they have invoices that come in. And so just because they had a price file that says this is $89.99 doesn't mean that's actually where they're going to get invoiced. And so we also want to take care of the reconciliation. So when we look at the actual invoice reconciliation side, we're pulling it over API sometimes, FTP, CSVs over email, really any way we need to. But we're starting to notice more and more stuff be available over API, but even things like EDI are not gone in our world. And that's one of I think important parts of working in the industries we do is we recognize that's just the reality, and it's going to be that for a while.
And from a data endpoint perspective, is it primarily marketplaces, owned websites, and then say back office systems like ERPs, WMSs, those types of things? These are the primary sources of data where you're getting your data from.
Yeah. And shipping solutions, right? Shipping's a big one in our industry. We're working with a couple of PIMs too to understand what does the integration need to look like there, because we do want to provide, we don't want to create the content. I want to be very clear. We do not want to be the curators of automotive data for the content side, but we do have partners that do that. And so how do we create a really rich feedback loop for them and eventually even to their ad platforms and things like that?
Okay, the Salsifies of the world, the Sendigos of the world, whoever it is that you
exactly
need to integrate with for the 800-pound gorillas in the automotive space. So it's exciting. Exactly. And so you provide effectively a dashboarding type of solution, right? Where not only you can see the trends demonstrated, I'm guessing in multiple different graphing methodologies, pie charts and bar charts, et cetera, but then I guess from there, anomaly detection becomes, because obviously you want to be able to see the trends, but then you need to be able to somehow auto-detect when something goes awry by mistake. Let's say, I don't know, when you're pricing out your products in your ERP or you're adding a specific margin from a supplier that you've got in at a base price level. Sometimes these errors happen. That's the reality. Errors happen in our industry. And so in your case, what you're trying to do is you're trying to say, okay, here's a trend, but here's what seems like an anomaly. You may want to investigate this.
Exactly. And that's the big key of this, right? Visualization is great. Like we have a dashboard, our clients use our dashboard. It gives them this feed, but that is not going to be the best way to identify potential problems, right? Because you might be still selling something at a 16% margin, and that's a healthy threshold for you. But what if you were selling it at 34% before? That's still something you want to understand and investigate. And so what we want to be able to do is use this to understand where are there some abnormalities that we think we really need to understand or some trends, and then being able to surface this up. And as we are building this out for user cases, we also want to make sure that right insight gets the right person. So the CFO might want to know something different than the COO, different than the e-com manager, different than the shipping and receiving manager. And so one of the things that we really feel strongly about building our solution out is that we have role-based insights. And so that way, because we have 100 things, 500 things we could tell people every day, but how do we tell each person the right two or three that will be impactful? And that's the key, because there's just, if you just have a reporting solution in your ERP, right, you're just relying on NetSuite to source your data. That's, again, do you find the right insight at the right time? Because you don't know, you don't have that comparison. And that abnormality detection, I think, is actually probably going to be the most key aspect of helping us really improve margins, because that's how we measure success. Did we get your margins up? And so we've seen that by again, fixing the leaky bucket and helping people understand where to double down, it actually teaches them about their business. And so part of this is freeing up their time so your e-commerce manager can actually do what they're good at, but then also making sure that they've got their attention directed to the activities and decisions that are most impactful. And then what we're working on from an event tracking standpoint is how do you track the impact of that decision? So I can see 30 days, 90 days, 120 days later, what was the lift that I got out of this change or modification, instead of just making the change and hoping you read that post-it note in 6 months that reminds you that you did that in the first place.
And do you also, I know that especially with Amazon, maybe, I don't know if eBay and Walmart Plus are to the same degree, or even Target for that matter, but shipping guarantees and shipping times are so part and parcel of seller ratings. And the reality is that Amazon will demote you in a heartbeat if you're not shipping on time. Obviously, it's less of an issue if you're using FBA, if you're using FBM, or you're using some other methodology of getting the goods into your customers' hands. The reality is that you're at risk of hurting yourself if you're saying, hey, we're going to ship within 24 hours and it's going to be with you within 3 days. And you don't do that on a routine basis, it's going to really hurt you. Not only is it going to hurt you in terms of the feedback that your customers are giving and the types of ratings and reviews that you're getting, but it's also going to piss you off with the vendor, the merchant themselves, the Amazons of the world. And so are you also tracking that level of performance by the vendors to make sure, hey, you're actually living up to the promises that you're making, or you're not, and therefore this is impacting your performance?
Yeah, that's something we work on. Right now we have a report that we can pull from to see on-time deliveries for our clients. And we're trying to work on seeing when do you give an insight? When is it relevant? Because you don't want to know every time something's a day late, but you want to know if there's a pattern. And that's that same thing, right? It takes it from an insight to noise. And so what we've really noticed, again, with our customers who do leverage wholesale distributors to do some of their fulfillment, especially on Amazon, but again, it is the same with eBay, is like, how do you recognize when there's a pattern? There's a problem in one of your vendors, because you might be able to get a part cheaper somewhere, but if they're delivering on time, that's actually not cheaper for you anymore. And so we want to be able to pull this out. And again, the same thing happens with any supplier who has more of a distributed fulfillment center. Because we work with so many heavy parts, the need to have things distributed across the country is pretty significant. And also on-time delivery for repair parts is also key. So we need to make sure we understand that. And as we begin to support more B2B transactions on these other specific niche, I guess you could say, marketplaces right now for a shop to buy a part from a manufacturer, if they're trying to buy something other than Napa Advance, they want to go on there, and that same expectation doesn't change, except instead of it being delivered in 2 days, it's expected to be delivered in 2 hours. And so we still have to have that same monitoring in place.
And do you work with any international marketplaces at the moment outside of United States based or North American based marketplaces? I know that Mercado Libre is massive in Mexico and growing super fast. Mm-hmm. Amazon Mexico here is growing super fast. There's a couple of other up-and-comer niche-specific marketplaces growing here now in Mexico. I know that Amazon's obviously massive in Canada as well, but it does feel as though there is a bifurcation starting to happen around the world, where Amazon's iron death grip is not as complete outside of the United States as it is inside the United States. And so therefore, there are very regional and localized and vertical specific mm-hmm. marketplaces that are really finding super deep success when they go narrow. And their Amazon almost feels like it's a victim of a death by a thousand cuts in some markets. And so Are you finding that there's opportunity outside of the main marketplaces that you're currently working with for other markets?
Yeah, definitely. It's not something we're supporting at this point, but it's definitely something we've been keeping a close eye on, because you're exactly right. And I think that there's even a version of that. There's a version of that here too, right? I've yet to meet a successful automotive seller that has used the Amazon Buy Local program. Like, it's not working for them for whatever reasons. And so it's similar in that, especially for, we look at automotive in a few buckets. You have like the repair side. So like the shop goes on and buys a transaction. That is still e-commerce, right? It's that B2B e-com piece. Those are those vertical ones. And those are the same ones we're seeing emerge in Asia and Mexico and South America, because they are also moving online just like we are. But then here, we also have this kind of specialty equipment market and the DIYer type stuff. And that stuff is also on Amazon having some stumblings, because there's issues with counterfeit and concerns around counterfeit, right? A lot of the brands are a little skeptical. They don't know if their products want to be listed, because if I'm selling a $1,500 shock, right? Like if I'm selling anything like that and someone buys it off Amazon and I have that manufacturer warranty, how do I know that's not counterfeit? And so there's just like this whole skepticism around it within the automotive market. And I think it's because we're talking about vehicles, which link to safety, which link to big dollar items. And so I would argue that Amazon has that exact same problem within certain aspects of the automotive market. but they're also thriving on certain accessories, right? Low and cheap accessories. They're continue to dominate for that. But that's the difference about the automotive industry is like you have the same company selling multiple different types of products with multiple different success rates. So they can sell really successfully this category of products in Amazon, and these are going to have to ship to a different marketplace.
And are you finding that there's a shift in the market share by these major marketplaces in the automotive space? Because as an outsider's view, because I'm not an expert in this by any stretch of the imagination, apart from as a consumer. And I know that even a few years ago when I had needed to buy an air shock for my Mercedes E50, that the only place that I could get effectively an OEM aftermarket, but still OEM product was through eBay. And it was only through the United States, and I had to have it shipped to New Zealand. But I'm finding more now that Amazon oftentimes will have the same parts and it might be marginally cheaper. Whereas before, I would not have traditionally even started my search on Amazon for auto parts, because I find that Amazon's fitment information is usually very lacking in comparison to the Tech Alliance driven fitment information that's available via eBay. So even sometimes if I end up buying off of Amazon, I'll go to eBay, figure out the fitment information, maybe get the SKU, maybe get the MPN or something like that. And then I'll paste that into Amazon and I'll compare prices and maybe look for it even through a direct consumer website and see what the pricing is there. So I'll do my research. But are you finding that where, as an outsider, again, my perception was eBay had an iron grip on this market for like well over a decade, and it feels like that grip is absolutely loosening over the last couple of years.
Definitely loosening, I would say. I think that I don't think eBay is going to go away. I think some people in the industry would disagree with me. There's some skepticism, I think, about their ability to adapt and compete with Amazon, but eBay is still, especially for they're never going to lose on the used part side too. That's a piece that's always going to exist. And that's a whole, again, other industry, part of the industry too. But I do think that the enrichment of their aftermarket data is quite robust. But you have companies like Parts Tech, for example, which is really, I think, is it the bigger challenge to eBay, especially because a lot of these shops are able to get it. And as they decide to, or if they decide to have a direct-to-consumer website, are we going to see that change again? And the challenge with eBay, I think, is actually the mode of operation that the sellers like engage with it. And so it was very normal when I entered the industry in 2019, people would just say, oh, I have these five wholesale distributors. My catalog provider can create 200,000 listings of eBay data, and I'm just going to throw it in eBay and see what sticks. And they would chip away and sell and hope that they can get a top run seller after time. But I am not seeing many of those folks be successful, especially if they're new. What I am seeing be successful is people who really focus on lifetime value, honestly. So like the Amazon and the eBays, I think, are always going to have their role for these quick buys. But if you're going to buy a product from Mercedes, I would argue that you'd probably be more interested in having a website that has really rich content and shows you how to install the product, who, if you have a good experience, you can go back and buy all your Mercedes parts with them. And so those are actually the ones that I see becoming successful, are those who are really thinking about, how do I have a tailored approach? I can't compete with Rock Auto. I can't compete with all these people who have been on eBay for 5-10 years. But what I can do is understand my niche, understand my market, and try to go after people in that way instead of trying to just have this like traditional approach. So I think that is the change I expect to see in the industry, is this like hyper down focus on product category. Like one of our clients is just Aubert shocks and suspension parts, right? We have a couple other clients who just do European performance, right? And those same people come back and back. And that is where, again, it's a lot different when you're spending $5,000 on a purchase versus $5 on some tiny little thing for your car. It's almost a completely different product type.
Yeah, there's a saying, riches are in the niches, right? So the reality is that the niching down is a superpower, in my opinion. I worked with one of my clients, a consulting client, specialized in the 4x4 space. So 4x4 parts, that's all they did. They really did a hyper niching down, and only a very tiny percentage of their parts were OEM. They were primarily specializing in the aftermarket and performance four-wheel drive parts, right? Because it's such a massive upgrade. Almost everybody that has a four-wheel drive wants to, you know, personalize their four-wheel drive and make it theirs. And they want to upgrade the suspension and put Fox on it. And they want to do all these different things to do it, to make it their own. They got winches and roof racks and just everything you can imagine. And so they just found that all the toys. And they found that, and I'd love your take on this based on your experience with your merchants, is that the ability to have those products in stock at any given point in time was their differentiating. It wasn't like they didn't have any competition. It was just that their competition didn't have as broad a range of them in stock, ready to ship as they did. And I noticed this even in the motorcycle space. You know, when I was still in New Zealand, I had Z900, and I noticed that, you know, between Revzilla and Babbitts, you know, I wouldn't need to go to eBay, Amazon, et cetera. Between those two, I could usually find what I needed. I could usually get it faster. They would usually tell me, A, whether it's in stock, how many items they had, how long it was going to take to get to me. And oftentimes that's more accurate. It gave me more confidence because these guys are specialists. They're not just selling everything. They're really deep specialists on this area. And if you sent them an email, they would give you a really qualified response, give you links to the right SKUs for specific applications. And so I think that basically what you're saying is that if you want to compete against the big boys and girls of the industry and the big platforms in the industry that are selling 1P via their own marketplaces, then you better find a niche that you can own. Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening.
100%. And then you obsess around that niche and you understand them. And this is where I think kitting and bundling is like a big opportunity for success too, because you can come at the customer with a project in mind. So if you're just selling stuff on eBay, you can still do that, but people are just throwing up everyone's. If you look at search an MPN of any main automotive part on eBay, everyone's listing looks the same. And that's a fine starting point, right? You might want to start with, so in our industry, we have something called ACES and PIES data, which are industry standards. So PIES data is the product data. ACES data is what does it fit? And that's required data to pull it in. But just because you have, and you still need a robust distribution network, right? Because availability, right? You want to have a robust product line, but you want to be based on the year, make, model, the product category, anything. And now all of a sudden, like you can create content around that. Like I think social stores are going to take market share. Like I actually think TikTok is going to crush it, whether that just be in an ad that they're running or in the actual shopping experience alone, because people want to see that content creator. And we know some content creators right now who do a lot of repair videos, who people buy products from them because they want that YouTube station to still be there in 5 years. Like they don't want that YouTube station to go away. And so we see this happening with the content creator market and e-commerce merging. And I think in auto, it's like super rich for that. And probably even, I would argue even more so than maybe in like fashion, because of people having that affinity for that group and wanting to support, same way we've been doing in brick and mortars in our communities. It's that you feel like the purchase you're buying it from, you trust them. And so if you're going to drop a few $1,000 on a new toy for your car, right? Of course, you're going to go there and do that over eBay. Again, it's, and I think that's actually important because it's, people aren't price shopping with quite the sensitivity. Like you can't charge 20% more.
But if you're a specialist and you can give the person buying the confidence that they're actually buying the right thing for the right application, and they're not going to have to send it back potentially overseas to send it back, then they'll spend more for the privilege of having that guarantee that they're buying the right thing.
Exactly. It comes down to trust, right? The ability to buy off a website and to buy off a brand that you trust, right? Because that's really all a retailer is. And again, the manufacturers have the benefit of saying, I am a manufacturer and people buy from Fox because it's buying it from Fox, right? You want to buy direct from the manufacturer. And that is their value proposition. And that's great. And I can totally understand. I've done that many times before. But if you are a reseller, whether you own inventory or pure purely dropshipping, you are not actually selling your products, right? Like I don't actually argue that's not your product at all. Your product is the experience that someone has at your website. And that's why, like I said, things like kits and bundles are critical, because I recognize that I can do a year make model search on my car and I can understand exactly, oh, this is everything I need to do to lift my car. This is everything I need to do. And sometimes they'll include tools with it, some of the little stuff. And now you're really not price shopping. You're just, it's a convenience buy. Like you're buying the bundle, buying the package. And I think that if people just shift their mindset to, I have to have every part under the sun, to I have to think about the projects that someone has in mind when they come to my website, now all of a sudden you can have, you still might have a decent amount of listings. It's just the way you're presenting them. And most of the good websites I've seen, they actually start with that fitment search.
Totally. Absolutely. And that fitment integration, fitment technology integration is We could go down a rabbit hole on the numerous ways that can be integrated in and what data sources you can get from. And do I store that in my PIM or do I pull it in real time when somebody's in a specific category? Do they create a garage on their website? Okay, these are my vehicles in my garage. Do I want that filtration? When I select I'm working on this vehicle, do I want that filtration to persist across my website and across my session and across my journey so that I'm only seeing things that are going to fit that particular vehicle? So there's lots of ways to slice this and dice this. But I think your point holds true, which is, if you think of yourself as opposed to just a parts supplier and you move your mindset to being a solution provider instead, and everything that goes around providing that a holistic solution, that's a totally different way to think about approaching the market, right? Yep. And then if you're creating a virtual SKU inside your ERP, for example, or in your PIM system, that's actually a bundle. It's just a BOM. It's just a bill of materials. It's got five different components in it. Two units of each of those five components in it. And boom, that's our unique SKU. And so that's a SKU that can't be searched on because it's unique to us. This particular combination of components, and whether it be might be a combination of some OEM, some aftermarket, some upgrade, some standard performance. If we think about it that way, we think about creating tiers of groups of products and bundles of products for a specific application and specific use case. Computer manufacturers, computer suppliers, computer stores have become masters at this because anybody can buy the CPU, anybody can buy the memory, anybody can buy the case and put a computer together. But it's these computer stores who have pre-built specific combinations of components that is the real value. And it's the fact that they put it all together for you and they've tested it and they know it works, right? And in your case, because you're working primarily with marketplaces, not exclusively, but with primarily, are you also pulling in things like PPC data? So if I'm a brand, I'm selling on Amazon and I'm also running ads on Amazon, then that becomes part of my COGS, right? That becomes part of my cost of goods sold and marketing and all my shipping costs and everything. So what data points do you not pull in today that you think are important that you think, hey, in the future, we will definitely pull this in because it is part and parcel of sales and ultimately margin performance?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So right now we do it on a little bit of a, I would say like a hands-on basis, because as we all know, ad attribution is a nightmare, an absolute nightmare right now. But ad costs are incredibly expensive, which makes all the things we just talked about more important, right? Long tail keywords are key right now. But I think that for us right now, we're pulling in a lot of that ad data, especially on Amazon, eBay, especially because eBay has this weird thing called halo listings where they just basically arbitrarily decide, it's not really arbitrary. They arbitrarily decide to charge you for additional similar listings.
Exposure, whether or not you had margin. Exposure.
Yeah. So anyways, there's a lot of these weird ad things. So we try to pull this in because we do want to understand those ad costs, attributing back to a sale pretty hard, but we can't attribute it back to a SKU. And so what we'd like to do is let this, the legalness of this play out. And then eventually I think that we'll pull in a lot more of the data. I would say like where we really want to get more robust in our analytics is when we come back down to looking at profitability, right? We can do it by order and SKU and brand and vendor and all this other stuff right now, but being able to do it by year, make, model and being able to slice and dice that. So we can say, hey, this is actually the highest, this is on a rise of both margin, profitability, right? Double down on this specific year, make, model, make more content around it. And then what makes us unique too, being in the automotive, is there's something called VIO data that basically tells us what cars are where, especially in the United States. And so we can now layer on VIO data. So we can understand that, okay, for you to run an effective ad, we know you have good margins on this specific product and this specific bundles, whatever it's going to be. And by the way, there's a high density of them in these certain geographies. And so we're going to get a lot more lift out of it. And so we want to be able to use some of those really specific things. And again, same thing on the B2B data side, right? If we're working with a wholesale distributor who is selling into, let's always say they're on Parts Tech, right? The platform I brought up before. We want to be able to say, okay, we recognize like this is a specific pattern that you have in your sales data right now, because while we think that they know the patterns around inventory and availability, and we think for consumer availability is important, it's really important for shops. They're not price sensitive. They are quality and availability sensitive, because the last thing that they want to do is have it sit on a car, sit on their bay for 3 extra hours, or even worse, they install a part, recognize it was counterfeit, and or just crappy, whatever, because they care a lot about brands. They need to install that. That is the reputation of their shop. And so it exists in a very similar format. And we want to be able to understand too, for those folks who are doing both B2B and B2C, okay, how do these things pull in together? Because there's a lot of roll-ups, there's a lot of PE activity in the automotive space. And so it's very normal for a holding company to have 5 retail brands, 7 different manufacturing brands, 4 wholesale distribution centers. Like, how do you pull all that data in together? And so for us, like growth isn't just about the variables we're pulling in, but it's what type of transactions actually taking place. And then how does that roll into insight back? Because again, our whole goal, our lagging indicator for us as a company is, did we improve your margins? Which is why we're so big on promoting a more tailored shopping cart strategy, because we think the best thing that most companies can do to improve their margins is to have a more focused approach. And so we do a lot of education around that. We do a YouTube series right now that's specifically helping folks try to understand, like, how do you have a more focused strategy and how do you have alignment across your sales team? So that way you can be executing a lot more efficiently.
And here's an out of left field question for you, and maybe you'll be able to answer it, maybe not, but how has the rise and fall to a degree of EVs affected the automotive industry? Because now we have a scenario where most EVs have a lot less moving parts in them now, and they're oftentimes sealed unserviceable parts in many respects, especially if it's a giant high voltage motor. You're just going to go and buy a stator, right, off of Amazon or eBay for that motor and rebuild the motor yourself. In fact, you're going to have, if it's a Tesla, it's going to have to go back to Tesla, or it's going to have to have mobile service done to it or whatever. And so it feels like, to a degree, in some respects, the whole entire industry is changing. Sure, there's millions and millions, hundreds of millions of ICE vehicles out there, and they're going to be hundreds of millions of ICE vehicles out there for the foreseeable future. And we see Toyota pulling back on EVs. We see Hertz getting out of EVs. We see pushback on EVs, I think, largely because ideologically they've been shoved down our throats, whether we want them or not. And governments are forcing it down our throats and everything else. But there's definitely been a pushback, and the sales, as the incentives drop away, we've seen sales fall off a cliff for EVs. But when it comes to the parts side of the equation, it feels like where somebody might have historically done a bit of DIY, done a bit of tinkering, maybe done a bit of upgrading, maybe done these different bits and pieces themselves, even the suspension isn't serviceable on these cars. Like, it's all electronically calibrated and everything else. And so it's a computer that controls everything. And so, and even ICE vehicles, modern ones, are much less serviceable by the average person DIYer at home, but they're still more DIY than your average EV. And so, have you seen an impact on the parts market because of the rise of EVs?
So I would say not yet. Because if you think about any car that is going to be, if you think about the repair side, most of them are still ICE. EV cars are not getting serviced at the rate that we would expect. Maybe some hybrids, but you're right. Like, for the last 10 years, like, even my Ford Bronco, it's like very hard to work on. I could probably work on an 82, but I can't work on mine. And so we haven't gotten there. I was just at a conference last week. It was for the Auto Care Association, and it was Women in Auto Care. And that was a whole panel about trends. And it was funny, as they looked at both the heavy duty market and the kind of just traditional automotive market, aftermarket industry, they had the charts on, like, oh, this is where we think EVs will be by, 24. And everyone, that was way off. And I thought it was actually conservative. I was like, oh, they expect only half the cars on the road or a third to be like EVs. So it's interesting because the market's really pushing back with it. We've seen some regulations come up in California that are getting a lot of pushback by our industry associations. And I think for us as a company, we're doing math. So, like, we pay attention to it, but we're just doing math, right? Because there's always going to be parts sold. But to your point, the place that transaction's going to happen, I don't think we're going to notice a huge change in 5 years, but I do think it's going to be a big change in 10. To what extent, I don't know, because certainly repair shops are thinking about that, right? Most repair shops can't do a lot of they can't work on electric vehicles. They can't even do battery replacements. They can't do a lot of the autonomous vehicle controls even. Like, they have to have really specific regulations around that. However, they're all now, okay, we need to make these investments. It's going to be an interesting shift. I don't quite know. I don't think I have a good expectation, because I hear so many on both sides of where it's going to go. So we're in just hyper listening mode to see where the industry goes. The right to repair law is also, if I'm not sure if that's something you followed, but that's something that's a really hot topic in our industry right now. And it's actually happening in parallel, because even though right now we can replace these cars, right, there's still a lot of heavy restrictions from manufacturers. It's consumer electronics too. It's not just automotive, that are really hurting our industry a lot. So there's a lot of energy put behind right to repair. So it'll be interesting to see if we can push some legislation there forward to help it make it easier for independent body shops to do a lot of these modifications, these changes, these improvements, fixes on these cars. Hopefully that'll still leave some room as we're making all these other changes.
Yeah, I feel you there. And so you guys, you're a SaaS platform, right? Yep. It's all the data is pulled in by you from all these different sources. It's hosted by you. You crunch the numbers. You do the data visualizations. You display the insights for the merchant to try to help them figure out maybe where there's an anomaly or an opportunity. You help them execute on that. do a lot of hand holding, white glove onboarding. How do you guys make your money? How do you charge? Is it a fixed fee per month for the platform? Is it the number of SKUs you host? Is it the insights you provide? How do you charge?
Yeah. So right now we don't do it on the SKUs we provide because that would price us out. That's a challenge with a lot of other platforms, I think, for our industry is they're like charging based on SKUs, which makes sense, but not for us. So we charge right now based on the number of orders under management is really the variable price for our shipping. Right now, we basically give white glove service to every single one of our customers. That's where we are as a solution right now because we want to be really effective. Eventually, we will have kind of an enterprise and a standard edition, which includes more white glove versus more AI doing the work. And yeah, we just roll that on a monthly fee. We try to be as effective as we can and having good ROI for our customers. That's the nice part about being a startup is that we get to be agile and get to work with them and really feel partners along with the way with them.
And in terms of you out of the box integrations that you can roll out today easily and consistently at scale, obviously you've already said the Amazons, the eBays, the Walmart pluses of the world. What I'm guessing you have an out of the box integration with Shopify, the BigCommerce, Magento. Like who do you integrate with that kind of that's easy for you to roll out to?
Yep. Yes. Yeah, so right now, the three marketplaces you mentioned in Shopify, we're working on BigCommerce and Magento. Those will be our next big platforms. And then there's a couple other specific industry platforms that we'll get as we bring on clients for those. And then again, also the shipping solutions. And then one that we work with a lot in our industry is what we consider those hubs, things like Channel Advisor, Arithium now. And then there's a few other smaller ones that are really tailored for industry, as well as now we're starting to work with more of the PIMs as we start to understand more about the product data. Right now, most of our customers are Shopify, Amazon, eBay, Walmart, but BigCommerce and Magento are just around the corner for us too.
Love it. Love it. And what you said that you're a little bit bespoke in the sense that you can pull all kinds of data and you can do visualizations and all kinds of things, but it's about working out what's the most relevant to your customers, sometimes on a case-by-case basis. But is there anything your platform does not do today that you go, we really want our platform to be able to do this that on your roadmap over the next 12, 18 months?
Yeah. So the event tracking and the forecasting is going to be huge for us. We believe that's going to be really when we're going to start supporting more what I would consider small enterprises. So right now, we're just doing a look back. And we are not, when we give them that recommendation, we basically have a binary that says, did they do it? Did they not? And then we'll piecemeal go back and see the lift of that. But being able to do a robust event tracking is going to be huge for us. And that's one of the things I'm most excited about. We have a lot of customers waiting on that specifically to be done, but we wanted to make sure we had the fundamentals correct first. And so what we want to be able to do, as I mentioned, is give you an insight, measure the lift. Now we can use deep learning to actually understand not just was this a good insight for anyone in the industry, but was this a good insight for you? And being able to understand the profitability of that lift, because right now, a lot of times you're an e-commerce manager, maybe you find something important, you put it in and you forget to measure it. Right. And then you never get any more learning. And also being able to run simulations out so we can say, hey, what would happen if we made this change? Because we can start doing better forecasting, whether that be for demand forecasting, inventory, pricing, whatever it might be. Now all of a sudden we can come back in and say, hey, we're giving you this insight because we predict that we can actually give you additional $10,000 of profitability over the next 6 months. Right. That really specific quantification of the insights we're giving, I think is really what's going to build our tool out. And it's also going to make us just much more enterprise ready.
I would imagine that also availability tracking is also a really important part of this, because if you know that if this particular SKU 95% of the time is bought with these other two SKUs and one of those is out of stock, then you're not just losing the one SKU sale, you're losing all three SKUs worth of a sale for the entire time that's out of stock. So you can forecast, okay, if you're out of stock of this range of SKUs, then this is probably the amount of sales that incremental sales you're going to lose over the next 30 to 60 days until that product is back in stock. So therefore, it's maybe worth investing more in stock holding of that particular item, and especially depending on supplier performance and time lag to getting that product back into stock. So it feels like the logistics side of it and the logistics analytics also feels like a massive vector and opportunity for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. We consider it to be like operations and finance teams is really the data teams we're supporting. And so operations is exactly what you said. And also we've been recognizing if you have a supplier network, I'm seeing their inventory chip down in our system where I'm seeing your sales go up. Hey, you might want to go pay attention because you're risking, this is a hot product right now. And if you think that WD is monitoring that, they might not be. They very much will. May not be realizing that. So you might decide, okay, this is actually something I want to buy in bulk. This is something I need to have beta availability, especially if this is a campaign that I'm launching, right? The worst thing you want to do is launch a campaign and then recognize that you didn't have the inventory to support it. And it matters when you own your inventory, but it also is relevant if you're dropshipping. It's really like, is a key component of this whole, yeah, how do you increase your profitability, performance, and really visibility online?
Love it. Absolutely love it. Look, Lauren, this has been fascinating, super interesting, cool conversation in an area that I'm by no means an expert in. You are. I love this. This has been so insightful. How do people get a hold of you? I'll put a link to your website and your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. But if people want to get a hold of you, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, so we've got some contact information form on our website. Easy to fill that out. Usually it's going to come directly to me. I still do a lot of the sales and onboarding for our clients at this point still. We also are really open to learning. And so if you're in the automotive industry, or again, even I put those kind of industrial parts and components, we always are looking for more opportunities to support sellers, both in the content we create and also in our solution as a tool. So we offer tons of a free consultation to folks over time, and we're always happy to take those calls.
Absolutely love it. Now, as we come down to the end of our time together, I like to flip the script. I like to turn the microphone over to my guest, let them ask me one question. Any question they like, can be personal or professional. Lauren McCullough, what is your question for me today?
Ooh, okay, let's see. So we talked about the shifting in market, like the market demand, right, on these different platforms. What do you think marketplace's roles are going to be in 2040 for the automotive industry, if you had to take a guess?
Look, I think that it is going to, I think as total market share of total e-commerce sales, marketplaces are just, they're going to increase. The reality is that the biggest benefit that marketplaces bring to the table is aggregated carts. That's where you can have five different suppliers, one item from each of five different suppliers in your cart at the same time. They do the splitting of the orders. They handle getting those orders out, making sure the shipments come to you. They take responsibility and ownership for that. It's a convenience factor. And the reality is that e-commerce is all about convenience. It's about how easy can we make this? And I think we are going to see the continued rise of B2B marketplaces. And I think they're going to, just like B2B e-commerce in general is forecast to be 4 to 5, maybe even 6 times the growth of D2C, B2C over the next decade, at least up to 2030. I think we're going to see B2B marketplaces and vertical specific B2B marketplaces continue to explode. And I think that's going to be the growth story. Amazon's already called it with Amazon Business. They're making much bigger investments in Amazon Business. I think the rise of the B2B marketplace, and you know, with when we look at Shopify and Fair, and we look at some of the other tie-ups that are happening in the industry with the wholesale industry in particular, I think that this is going to be a massive upset. And what we're seeing, and I'm already seeing it, is that the largest WDs, the largest wholesale distributors in a given vertical, a lot of them are looking at ways in how they can move to an asset-light model. And what they're doing is they're becoming a marketplace instead. They're saying, we've got the traffic, we've got the mind share, we've got the market share, but we're not going to hold. So we're going to hold maybe in the inventory the top 20% of the SKUs that we sell, and we're going to actually warehouse those locally, and we're going to distribute those directly to our customers. But for the other 80%, we're effectively going to run a dropship model via a marketplace. And we're going to run that marketplace directly within our own website. We're actually going to be a supplier on our own marketplace. And so this is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a massive shift in mindset in the B2B world, especially in the WD space, where they're going, do we really need to be an asset heavy model? Probably not. We probably only need to hold 20 to 30% of our total catalog in inventory at any given point in time. And as long as we know the inventory numbers of the suppliers at SKU level that we can host in our platform, so at least we can give accurate shipping times for these particular orders or items within an order, then that we can call it good from there. And we can run and we can clip the ticket on every single sale that comes through our vertical. And we can be the epicenter. We can be the vector of every single sale, or 80, 90% of the sales that come through our vertical. So this is the changes or the evolution that I'm seeing. Whereas pre-pandemic in particular, almost zero B2B brands were thinking, let's set up our own marketplace. And now they're going, man, there's a big market to be had here. And we are known for this thing. We're known for this specialization. And we want to effectively offer an endless aisle, the equivalent of an endless aisle, but in the B2B world.
Yeah.
And we think we can do that by onboarding brands and onboarding products faster into our catalog if we don't have to hold inventory of those products. And it allows them to scale quicker because it's less capital intensive. So these are some of the changes I'm seeing coming down the pipe in our industry.
Yeah, nope. I think that's great. Great. I 100% agree with you on all the B2B stuff.
It's exciting. It's a super fun place to play. Lauren, super cool to chat with you. I super appreciate your time. You've been a joy and a pleasure to speak with today. And I'm sure that my listeners will get a ton out of this conversation. I can't wait to do it again soon. Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.